I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons Now with 23% new footage. I'm your host, Captain Wacky, later renamed Bob, and this is a chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Creator of Johnny Reb, Henry Gilbert.
And who else?
Cat Bailey, the nation's premier showcase for psychiatrist jokes and musical comedy numbers.
It's very true. And today's episode is The Simpsons 138th Episode Spectacular.
Get out of my house!
Matt Groening himself. Today's episode aired on December 3rd, 1995, and Henry will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-world history.
Oh my god!
Oh boy, Bobby! Folks are shooting up arcades with Time Crisis, NASA's Galileo probe lands in Jupiter, and the real stars are on Cable Ace Awards, where the Larry Sanders Show wins just about every award in the comedies.
Wow. You know, I've heard girls go to Jupiter to get more stupider. Is that an official, like, science fact?
That's what Galileo was trying to figure out, that they went into the eye of Jupiter to figure that out.
And boys go to college, is what I've also heard.
I find Jupiter so fascinating just because the size of that giant red spot.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It ain't nothing but gas.
It's really cool. I mean, how many Earths can fit in that thing, and it's just a giant storm? That's cool.
Yeah. You know what I thought was cool was Time Crisis. I was more of a Virtua Cop guy. That was my main light gun shooter.
There are
shooter.
Like five of those things now, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's 8 million of them.
But Time Crisis won't die. Like, it's one of the few arcades that won't go away.
Virtua Cop, they just did too, but Time Crisis, maybe because they didn't have police branding, it's even more like universal.
I love Time Crisis, but the home versions are not the same. You need that squeaky pedal to step on.
Gotta have that squeaky pedal. Yeah. It doesn't feel the same. Have you seen those videos of people high level players in arcades like actually jumping behind stuff?
I have not seen that
point in it. It's pretty.
That sounds awesome.
Neat. Yeah.
In case anyone was wondering, in this game, you step on a pedal to either enter or exit cover when you're shooting at people.
Yeah.
It's a light gun game.
It's a
cover based shooters were not a thing at that time.
Hey, that's right. Namco was ahead of the curve.
They invented it.
It's man. This last week's episode was a real long one. I'm wondering how long this one will be because it is a clip show.
Yes, and it is the best clip show,
easily.
I think. So Oakley and Weinstein, they had to do a clip show, contractually. Jinx. And also they wanted to make it good, and I think they accomplished a lot, especially in the days before DVDs. They're showing us a lot of things that we can't see normally, like Tracy Ullman shows shorts, and we can't also see deleted scenes at this time. So they're really offering a service to the viewers.
You don't even really think of it as a clip show because you're seeing all of this. Oh, I didn't know about this. I did not know about the Tracy Ullman show stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
Henry
at
did.
All.
Henry was like day one.
Not day one on Ullman, but I was watching this third year of Ullman live as a kid.
I wondered if it was real. I was like, is this real? What the hell? This is so ugly.
Yeah, I was a Simpsons historian even then, and I was like, yes, finally, I can see these.
And also they knew that Oakley and Weinstein know they're like, Phil Hartman makes everything better. Like, we can just lean on Phil Hartman to make this work.
I mean,
he does.
Oh, my God.
For real.
I don't think anybody else could nail that the way that he did.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that there are, like, quotes that you quote from a clip show. Like, there are a few lines in this that I do quote. Like, the last clip show, there was not one good line in another Simpsons clip show.
Mm-hmm.
No, there wasn't.
Yeah, okay, no. I mean, that was made aggressively bad to prove a point that they could.
I wanted to talk about the production, though. So in terms of budget, they had about 5 minutes of full animation they could use. So you can see there's a lot of still Troy McClure. There's a lot of frames of things that are shown, especially the viewer mail thing.
A lot of rock and roll voice movements on Troy as well.
That too. And this episode was directed and written pseudonymously. So the director is David Silverman, and the writer is John Vitti, who goes into the story on the commentary. He's like, I'm not sure how much of this I can say, but he basically did it to avoid a lengthy court thingy.
Yeah. Like, you owe us X amount of scripts. You can't leave. He's like, but I want to leave. That's how I read it.
I think instead of writing two episodes, he agreed to write one episode and two clip shows
as a way
to get out of writing an entire full episode of something.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
He went by Pennywise and Pound Foolish on this one because it was their way of saying fuck you to how cheap Fox was being to get another episode to syndicate. That was the point of it. But this episode starts off with them just like getting in your face like, this is a clip show, guys.
Yes.
This is not a normal episode. If you're bored by this, get out of here now.
I have one more thing to add, though, about the production. Like all of the extra episodes we see in season 6 and 7 and 8, they're not run by the showrunners at the time.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, this one is run by George Meyer and Greg Daniels.
Oh.
So, like, Merkin would come back to run a few episodes in this season, you know, like Lisa the Vegetarian and Team Homer. These two guys were just put on board to run the clip show.
Wow. That kind of thing makes me think, like, if Daniels hadn't left to co-create King of the Hill, he would have been the guy who took over for Oakley and Weinstein.
I think it would have been Greg Daniels and David S. Cohen being, like, twin showrunners.
If they hadn't both got their own shows.
So damn it.
Leave a big Mike Scully-sized void open right there. We talked with Bill Oakley a little bit about this clip show in our second interview on Patreon, listeners, and he details a lot about how, like, their budget came out of a different place. It was from the Fox ad budget instead
right.
of from Gracie.
Yeah.
And that they only had these deleted scenes because of, like, just an editor saved it. Nobody thought in the 90s, like, should we save these things we filmed on The Simpsons?
People would trash stuff like that in the 90s all the time. One of the reasons, I mentioned Babylon 5 last episode. So one of the things that's infuriating about Babylon 5 is that it was done in CG at the time, and the CG, unfortunately, is still in standard def because they weren't able to up-res it because they don't have any of the original models or anything.
Ooh, boy.
So if they wanted to ever remaster it and put it in HD, they would have to redo all of the CG from scratch.
People have those kind of budgets for Star Trek. They don't
they
have
just
it
deleted
for Babylon
it.
5. Yeah.
They just deleted it.
Well, why are you going to use it again?
I think large chunks of Johnny Carson's early Tonight Show run are just gone, which is why he later took the steps to preserve everything he has ever done since then, and like whole episodes of Doctor Who are now just missing.
Yeah, you know, and Johnny Carson was so much about archiving that if you're like me and fake being a filmmaker to get access to the Johnny Carson archives, which I did briefly,
I'm making a movie.
Well, you really only get to see like a labeled preview of it to then go like, well, I would like to pay you $20,000 to use this clip in my documentary about a person Johnny Carson interviewed once. But the most interesting thing on it is not only is it like the best version of filmed late night stuff from like the 70s or 80s, it is the entire broadcast, including commercials.
Oh, wow.
It is the best version of 80s commercials that are on there, too, in the Johnny Carson archives, even though I don't think he should have even the rights to that, right?
But I think maybe he had a special deal or something because, like, no one was thinking about preserving talk shows at the time.
And now you can't make a documentary about, like, say, Gilbert Gottfried without paying the Carson family a little bit of scratch to get those rights to his footage in there.
Media companies are very sophisticated now.
Yeah, now they now understand ownership.
You think about in the 80s and even in the 90s, I mean, TV was 40 years old at that point. I mean, it was still a relatively new medium, all things considered.
They weren't thinking about music rights. They weren't we're lucky that The Simpsons is so big that Fox will, after the fact, repay for music license rights for DVD releases.
Yeah,
sure.
It doesn't happen with, say, Mission Hill.
It's weird to see, like, on modern documentaries like the Dana Carvey Show one, they just use YouTube clips. And, like, they're just like us. They have the same resources as we do.
That's true.
Yeah.
God, dude. So this episode made me miss Phil Hartman so much.
It was one of his best.
Easily one of his best.
Like, I mean, he carries the whole thing by himself. That's why I rewatched this one so many times in syndication, and whenever I saw it come out, I was like, oh yeah, this one, because of Phil Hartman.
He probably made this show a lot cheaper to make because he is one actor as opposed to five or seven.
Yeah, you know, only Dan does any new voice acting in this of the regulars because he plays Matt Groening.
Oh, right. And that was probably just like, come in here for 5 seconds and say this.
But at the same time, they had to come up with new designs for Sam Simon, Matt Groening, and James L. Brooks, and they actually animated Matt Groening, too.
David Silverman worked extra hard on this, even though we'll get to it later, but he was not happy during the production of this at times.
Oh, gee, yeah. I wonder why.
Yes, but so the opening gag with the sign of the alternate lifestyle senior prom sounds like the senior prom for gay kids.
Yes.
Though it really reminded me, this is not exactly the same, but there was a great HBO documentary called Prom Night in Mississippi, which was about Charlton, Mississippi's first integrated prom. And this happened in 2008.
Oh, boy.
They had segregated proms, not segregated schools, but proms would have been segregated.
I thought you were going to say like 1988.
Yes. So, like 1968.
That's why it's so fascinating. In 2008 in Mississippi, they're like, I guess we better integrate the proms. Like, wow. Jesus Christ, right?
They took off their cowboy hats and stomped on them.
Prom night in Mississippi, a good one. Mississippi, the worst state in America.
Did you ever go to a gay prom, Henry?
No, I was not out
totally
at the
did.
Time. You did?
Yeah, wow. It was great. I went with my friend. We were not dating at the time, but mm-hmm. we totally went, and it was great because my high school said that you could not go with someone in the same sex. My mm-hmm. girlfriend, on the other hand, did get to go with a girl to her prom.
Oh, boo, yes, man.
Because she lived in the city and I lived in the suburbs.
Oh, of course, man. Wow, man. You were out and proud back in high school. Not me. No way. Yes.
I just had a terrible prom. I don't want to talk about it. I have an unexpected clip. Unexpected clip alert. Whoa. Listen to me. So, Troy McClure says you may remember him from such specials as Alien Nose Job. This is referencing a very recent thing in Fox history. A huge, huge, huge special of theirs called Alien Autopsy Fact or Fiction. It aired on August 28th, 1995. You might think that is too recent for this show to reference, but as the commentary tells us, these clip shows often had like 3 weeks of production to put together.
Wow.
So this is Jonathan Frakes introducing a fucking load of horseshit for Fox viewers. It's great.
The following program deals with controversial subjects. The theories, opinions, and beliefs expressed are not the only possible interpretation. Viewers are invited to make a judgment based on all available information.
I did not watch this.
If what you are about to see is real, it's the most startling film footage in history. Although we remain skeptical, some experts believe this is authentic footage of an alien life form. Real or not, we must warn you. This appears to be an actual autopsy. Some of the footage you will see in the next hour is very gruesome. Stay with us as we put the question to you. Alien autopsy, fact or fiction?
I remember the commercials for that
thing. I watched this and I was freaked out by it, but now looking at it, it's like, this is the fakest thing ever, and I love the language. If this is real, then holy shit. But if not, who's to say? Who am I to say? I don't know.
Yeah. They also did a found footage type thing that scared the hell out of me. Before
Blair Witch,
yeah. I was like, oh my God, those people were taken by the aliens.
I watched that, but I recognized one of the actors immediately, and I was like, oh, this is fake.
But man, using the good name of William Riker to sell
well,
this.
Well, I mean, this was a year after TNG, and he was a couple of years out from directing First Contact. He needed some work.
I just love how noncommittal they are. If this is real, then wow. Just wow, everybody.
If this were to be real, then on that possibility.
We recommend that you decide, not us.
This was such a Fox thing. I mean, they were totally piggybacking on the popularity of X-Files at this point. I mean, UFO stuff was so huge in the 90s.
And I also remember around this time, I think at the end of this season or the next of X-Files, it ends with an alien autopsy.
Of course. Autopsy was like it was in the zeitgeist.
Mulder films himself doing an autopsy of an alien, but then even he doesn't believe it's real as he's doing it.
And then he sells it to Fox and makes lots of money. I think it got like 10 million viewers or something crazy like that. Like a ton of people watch
this
thing.
People watch TV.
Before YouTube, man. But yes, let's hear that Troy McClure intro. This episode is going to be a great one, listeners, because it's pretty much just all Phil Hartman voice.
Hello, I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such Fox Network specials as Alien Nose Job and 5 fabulous weeks of the Chevy Chase Show. Tonight we're here to honor America's favorite non-prehistoric cartoon family. You'll see long-lost footage, never-before-seen material from your favorite episodes. Old favorites you can't see in syndication. So join me, won't you, for The Simpsons 138th episode, Spectacular.
This episode also fits into Oakley and Weinstein's MO in that they're very much like the caretakers of The Simpsons, the historians of The Simpsons. They want to celebrate it, like celebrate the lore of the show and the history of the show. So I feel like this is very much their thing.
Well, think about 1995. You didn't have access to any of this information. This is not on YouTube.
Right.
The internet was prehistoric at that time. So you would be searching high and low for this stuff. I didn't know any of this.
No way, me neither.
I don't know how, but I did. Like, I got every single magazine.
Because you were a super fan,
yes,
right?
I guess so, yeah.
For somebody like me who discovered it through syndication, I didn't know about, like, the Tracy Ullman show. I didn't know about half these clips, right?
I knew about the Ullman show, but I didn't know about, like, that there even could be deleted scenes or that they filmed other versions of Who Shot Mr. Burns, you know, that they did all that stuff. And you're right, Bob, that Dave Merkin, Al Jean, Mike Reese, in their clips, shows, they weren't thinking like, who cares? Like, I'm not thinking like a fan. I'm thinking of this itchy and scratchy short was funny. Just put that one.
Yeah, yeah. They really wanted to, like, make a clip show tolerable, but also have it celebrate the show, because we're seeing a lot of episodes this season and last that are kind of sort of like rewarding listeners, sorry, rewarding viewers rather, mm-hmm. for watching so long and remembering things.
I like that it's him warning people like old favorites you can't see in syndication, which is like, no, you can't see these. And so they're all in syndication.
Oh, what? Which ones?
Well, just him saying like, you can't watch these in syndication.
You can't watch
him.
Tracy Ullman's show.
Well, you can't. Yes. But when he says old favorites you can't see in syndication, that's a lie. You're watching all of these in syndication.
That's true.
And of all the things to show when he's talking about old favorites, it's Hitler being smashed by Itchy and Scratchy in an off-model Itchy and Scratchy.
You can't see in syndication. They were cut from the syndicated versions.
Oh, I see.
That scene was cut from syndication.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, that makes some more sense.
And that makes, like, Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, during their commentaries, they will complain loudly, like, they cut this part out in syndication, and I hate that they did that. Like, they remember which jokes were cut out.
I mean, I remember, too. It feels like a missing limb if I see, when I would watch in syndication. That's why, like, when I hear some folks who watched it all in syndication, I feel bad. I envy the dad in that case of just
I'm sorry.
Well, not really. Look, you had no other options. I understand, but it's
okay. We had DVDs now. I've seen the full episode.
Yes, but when I would watch them in syndication, I'm not saying I wouldn't watch them. I'd watch them, but passively if they were on. But it would drive me crazy every time there was a missing joke. I hated it. I would shake my fist.
We have heard the oral history of Henry's tapes on this podcast
many times.
December 14th, 1994. It's been a harsh winter and I deleted one scene on accident, mother.
Well, that's, I feel that same way when I watch these things, like, oh, that's a joke I didn't hear because I taped it wrong. Like, it's,
you're still living with the guilt.
I do. Well, that's my anxiety in general of just like, I remember a thing I said wrong once 8 years later.
The clips you deleted haunt you in your dreams.
I'll tell you my VHS story after this podcast.
Okay. So I love the intro to you telling you it's 23% new footage, and then also Bart saying, I will only do this once a year on the chalkboard, which they even slow that down after this. The next clip show is until season 10, all singing, all dancing.
I think it's a reference to how Fox wanted them to do 4 clip shows a year, mm-hmm. just to pad out episode length, or pad out season orders to get syndication money.
It's another
back when that was still a thing, to be honest. We were like, we need 24 episodes. Oh, okay, 24 episodes it is.
For this season to get to 25, they had to have 2 Merkin created ones and a clip show because it was too pushing the regular team too far to do 22 episodes.
Poor Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein's like, welcome to being a boss.
Yeah.
Make it work.
They both said you gain like 60 pounds by being a Simpsons showrunner.
And then we get all the couch gags in a row, including they top it with the longest time filling his couch gag they love to use of the big circusy ending and the kick line.
That was an Al Jean and Mike Reese like late season 4 favorite. Like, we are so overworked, we're leaving the show. Like, just put the circus thing in again. We need to kill time.
We need 30 more seconds on this. Just play the circus one. Yeah,
but I will always associate the circus one with the 138th episode spectacular because the montage of all the couch gags is part of the episode.
It is the one you end with out of all the couch gags. I saw they have in there on the couch gag the one where they run off the screen and then get back in. I just saw it appreciated by, I follow lots of animation dorks on Twitter, believe it or not, and they talked about how amazing the squash and stretch is in it, and they asked like, who animated this? At David Silverman at Tubatron, and he replied like, I'm pretty sure that was Greg Manzo, one of my favorites. And I was like, yeah, when you see it slowed down, you're like, God, they're so squashy and stretchy.
They've never been more cartoony.
Meanwhile, you see like, the Simpsons can't move now. They're very much stuck in place. So then we get a cute little history of the Simpsons.
The Simpsons began as the brainchild of cartoonist Matt Groening, the already famous creator of such comics as Damnation, Johnny Reb, and True Murder Stories. In 1987, Groening teamed up with award-winning producers James L. Brooks and Sam Simon. And what better place to premiere their creation than on The Tracy Ullman Show, the nation's showcase for psychiatrist jokes and musical comedy numbers. On April 19th, 1987, America first met The Simpsons.
So you'll never see those shorts in higher quality again.
No.
And especially when you're watching them on a DVD with an HDTV, you will see the edge of the artwork that was never meant to be seen. Like, TV overscan was supposed to cover that up. So you see, like, literally the edge of the cells, like, little markings that you're not supposed to see.
We asked Bill Oakley about this, and he didn't know if there was any reason the shorts haven't been officially released in any other form than this clip show. I believe the one of the prevailing theories is that Matt Groening just doesn't want people to see them, that it looks weird, they're not right, and so he doesn't want to share them. Maybe it's one of those things we have to wait until Matt Groening has like a late in life change of heart, or Matt Groening, you know, passes away.
They're sort of like the KTMA episodes of Mystery Science Theater, where eventually the producer of that show, the co-creator of the show, Jim Mallon, his arm was twisted enough where he finally released himself the missing episodes that,
yes,
that people did not tape, like the three beginning episodes.
That was nice of him to
do.
Well, I'm sure like a creator is going, well, this is what The Simpsons is, like what you're watching right now. What that was almost like a prototype.
It was, but Bob and I have been watching all the shorts for the $10 and up patrons. Get over there, folks. But when we watch them, I've gotten a new appreciation for them. They are crude. They are, the characters are not themselves in a lot of cases. Homer especially is like much more violent and mean
and stern.
But the animators are having a lot of fun there. And
yeah,
they're doing a lot of cool stuff in it. And they're inventing an entire thing right in front of your eyes. It's special in that way.
It's fun to see how much of it is actually nailed down that early. But I want to go
back.
More
than you think.
I want to go back to the Sam Simon drawing, the drawing of him as Howard Hughes with the long fingernails and the long beard,
yeah,
and surrounded by syringes. So the original joke was, Sam Simon's photo was going to be text photo not available. And that was a joke by John Vitti about how Sam was written out of the history of the show.
Yep, yep.
They asked for permission from Sam, and he's like, no, do this instead. And he sends them that drawing. Like,
if
you don't remember, Sam Simon helped create the characters in terms of how they're drawn. Like, I think he created Otto and Mr. Burns, like some of the major characters. So he drew that image. That is a Sam Simon drawing you're looking at.
Wow, they, I never knew that.
Yep.
Man, that is impressive. I mean, Sam Simon gets deleted out of it partially because him and Matt Groening didn't get along at all.
And the Matt Groening narrative is much more fun. Like,
yes, yeah. I fucking love the Matt. So the Matt Groening one to me as a comic book nerd was great because there are many crotchety, hard right-wing cranks in the comic book world. They, especially as they get older, even if they weren't at one point, guys like, say, Frank Miller become that.
Thanks, 9/11.
Yes, yeah. But there's a ton of dudes like that in the comic book world. And so that Matt Groening, I just love that you're waiting for creator of such comics as, and you're just waiting to hear a Life in Hell. They're going to talk about Life in Hell. Instead, he drew EC Comics, except more violent and more hard right. Especially Johnny Reb, I assume, is about a heroic Confederate soldier.
I mean, isn't he stabbing a Confederate flag into a dead Union soldier?
Exactly.
He is, yeah.
I mean,
and just that photo of Matt Groening with one eye, with missing an eye, saluting a flag. I think there's a little of John Ford in there as well.
That's a good gag because Matt Groening is, you know, such
a
kind of freaking liberal.
He's a pinko. He should go back to Massachusetts.
A little John Swartzwelder in there too.
Oh yes, yeah, that's true. And then meanwhile, James L. Brooks is just buried in money and awards. That's who James L. Brooks is. And when they talk about psychiatrist jokes on Tracy Ullman, I believe they're specifically talking about the other short that aired next to The Simpsons in the first season, Dr. Ngatu. Yeah, Ngatu. It's not funny. You can watch them all on YouTube. They're cute. They're just about it's a more of a feminine short for sure. Though I guess it actually fits more with the tone of Tracy Ullman than the Wild Simpsons.
Kind of does, yeah.
But I mean, look, I don't want to be too mean to them. They're fine. I love Groening on the commentary though, just laughing at how some people have come to think he actually is that guy and not the big, soft Portland hippie that he really is. You just read one Life in Hell comic, like current ones or old ones, recent ones are him just like speaking to the camera of like, here are my liberal beliefs right now. I'm going to spell them out for you.
They're all super leftist. If you don't know who Matt Groening is while watching this, you won't get these jokes.
Yes, yeah.
You might think they're exaggerating maybe like existing right-wing ideas, but you don't know, you don't get it's the opposite of Matt Groening.
I had no idea, to be perfectly honest, when I watched it, but I thought it was kind of funny that there was this guy with an eye patch yelling, get out of my office, shooting.
He kills the cameraman.
Because I assumed that that, I mean, I was like, oh, he's probably not that bad. I don't know what he's like. I'm sure that this is some kind of caricature. I don't know, but it was still funny.
But those shorts seeing, well, so I hadn't seen all those shorts, but I was prepared for what the shorts are. But when you first saw the shorts, Kat, were you like shocked that it looked that way?
Of course it was, because I was like, man, this is really crude. And also, that wasn't funny at all. I mean, what the hell?
I like the Troy comments on how unfunny it is, too.
Good night.
They haven't changed a bit, have they? As the weeks went on, so did the cartoon.
There was like this beat where he just looks at the camera like, what the hell?
What did I just watch?
Because he's like, probably the audience is thinking the same thing. Yeah. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Matt Groening is only talking about his regrets seeing it on the commentary. He's just like, why did I just draw a heart in that frame?
I forgot to finish the background there.
Yeah. Well, he'd never animated before. We'd never done it.
Well, if you think of it, you've been working on a thing for a while, and you've been honing your craft, and you're like, yeah, it's okay. I still have a lot of problems with it. And then you go back to your earliest version, you're like, what the, this is terrible, and hide it in a hole. I never want anybody to see it ever again.
Anytime I read something I wrote like 5 years ago, I'm like, how did I ever hit publish on this? I am the worst. I should cut my wrists right now.
Jesus.
I don't think that far ahead, guys. Sorry. I love this comment by Troy, too.
Maybe the drawings were a little crude, but all the characters were there. Itchy and Scratchy, Grandpa Simpson, and Krusty the Clown.
Making fun of themselves still more.
It's more like the writers making fun of the animators. David Silverman was very mad about this.
And rightly so. Yeah. I'm actually on his side.
So yeah.
I really like, okay, so the joke is mean, but I love the bad grandpa.
The three-eyed grandpa, seemingly. And the Krusty is like Krusty, just above a stick figure. But
he's like a balloon animal or something.
But in case you haven't listened to our premium videos, the thing about the original shorts, especially in the first year, Matt Groening would draw a storyboard, aka a comic strip, for the gags and hand them to three animators, David Silverman, Wes Archer, and Bill Kopp, and just said, you figure it out. And they did. And like that, David Silverman and Wes Archer, especially because they stuck around the longest, they defined the movement and look of The Simpsons more than anyone.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And they did a great, the first cartoons that have Grandpa in them and Krusty, they do look slightly off from what we're used to, but they look good. They're animated well.
They're like 20% different, maybe.
Yeah, they're 20. They don't look that bad. So David Silverman is right to be mad. There's already a clear discomfort between writers and animators on the commentary that if I was David Silverman, who honestly is better than a clip show, he should not be even doing a clip show. That's like
that's way below his pay grade.
Way. Yeah, surprisingly, he left a little after this season. So I think he was right to get pissed off about that and them mocking the shorts. And they also had no no budget either, nothing. Then we get our first commercial break.
In the opening credits, what does the cash register say when Maggie is scanned? The cash register says NRA forever. Just one of the hundreds of radical right-wing messages inserted into every show by creator Matt Groening.
God, that's beautiful.
They rode that gag the entire way.
Yes. which it of course does not. I don't know. I think as a kid, maybe the next time I watched an episode, I paused to see if it really said NRA forever. It might have fooled me once. That's even less funny now, I'd say. Not that the NRA wasn't like a terrorist faction in the 90s as well.
They have their own TV station now.
Ooh. I didn't get it when that episode aired. I was like, NRA, what?
I think this is probably what taught me the term NRA as a kid. No, wait, there's an NRA joke earlier, too.
And Brother, Can You Spare Two Dimes?
Where Bart becomes a member of the NRA and he gets to buy cyanide-tipped armor-piercing bullets, too. It's in the Constitution, son.
It's a ring in the new year.
Again, Groening laughs that one off, too. But I think he's probably not so funny to hear. You have people come up to him like, yeah, support the NRA, too, buddy.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
Then we get a cute little gag about how many letters that The Simpsons has received over 6 years.
Over the 6 years The Simpsons has been on the air, we've received dozens of letters from fans wanting to know more about the show. Tonight we'll answer some of your questions. Professor Lawrence Pierce of the University of Chicago writes, I think Homer gets stupider every year. That's not a question, Professor, but we'll let the viewers judge for themselves.
This Q&A is as good an excuse as any to just show clips, but...
Yeah, and it's also still images of fake letters, which also saves you on animation.
But internally, this was a issue Oakley and Weinstein had. They're like, Homer has gotten too stupid. We've made him too stupid. We got to scale it back. Like this, it was a fear for a long time internally. And then eventually they just like, who cares? He's dumb.
And I know why you're angry about this, Henry. And the writers called it out as well. The last scene is a Halloween
episode.
It's
not fair. It doesn't count.
They agree, but it was still a funny clip.
No, what they went with were some of the best animated moments, like especially the season 5 and 6 examples are David Silverman fun times of either spinning around and eating chips in space, which is not particularly stupid. Like, he's dumber in that episode in many ways.
Yeah, the Flaming Moe speech is not stupid. It's just a fun speech to watch. Like, the magical man from Happy Land. It's just like, it's not him being stupid. It's him being stubborn. And,
Now, I don't know. That is stupid.
That is stupid.
I liked how self-aware the joke was about Homer getting stupider every year. And that was the thing that I think always made Simpsons kind of special, was how self-aware it was in a time when TV was beginning to become self-aware, but not really. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe for people who grew up in that time period, being self-aware was the height of being cool. Like,
were smart enough to know how dumb stuff was. And that's like ironic,
I spotted the tropes, man.
How do you like that?
I think other shows were shy to point out TV's cheap tricks because they wanted to rely on those. They didn't want to be like, isn't this stupid that we do this? It's like, no, we do this and we present it to you legitimately.
And so also when I was a kid, I knew more people worked on it than Matt Groening, but... Even now, part of the show is me getting used to the idea of like, well, who does make this show then? Like, the size and scope of the staff, I still have like not even come close to getting a handle on. But this was our explanation back in 1995.
Dr. Linus Irvin of the Sloan Kettering Memorial Institute writes, how does Matt Groening find the time to write and draw an entire Simpsons episode every week? For the answer to this, we went straight to the source.
Get out of my office!
Of course, what Matt meant to say, according to his attorneys, is that he couldn't possibly do it alone. And he insisted that we make time to acknowledge the hard work of everyone who makes The Simpsons possible.
That's the Land of Chocolate music, by the way.
It's from the movie Tucker. That was the temp track for that episode, but they thought it was so good they didn't make new music.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I do love it. And if you pause it there, that is a bunch, that is a mess of names, but it kind of mixed together everybody, the writers, animators, tech people, everybody else. But you can pick out like Dave Merkin, Dan Castellaneta.
It also repeats them a couple times.
Okay. Yeah. How lazy. They even get lazy in this in a clip show. But the get out of my office is one of my favorites.
It's so well delivered.
It's good. It's the animation's great too.
And then
he's kind of like kicked back by the gun. He's such a weak old man.
It's beautiful. I got to give a thumbs up to Silverman on that one. Yeah, just the kick on his gun. It's beautiful. And I guess he killed a cameraman.
Yeah,
like, that person is dead. Then once you see all these clips together, I think you finally realize that what Smithers' real deal is.
Ambassador Henry Mwabwetumba of the Ivory Coast writes, what is the real deal with Mr. Burns' assistant, Smithers? You know what I'm talking about. Of course we do.
The preparations for your birthday have begun.
I won't get what I really want.
No one does.
Happy birthday, Mr. Smithers.
As you can see, the real deal with Waylon Smithers is that he's Mr. Burns' assistant. He's in his early 40s, is unmarried, and currently resides in Springfield. Thanks for writing. We'll be right back.
The whole, like, turning on the computer and having him do the, you're quite adept at turning me on. Mm-hmm. I had not seen that episode.
Oh,
because that one just didn't seem to be in syndication rotation. for me.
Oh, have you never seen Lisa versus Mel? I've seen it now. Okay.
But it's a classic now. But like there were a lot of these gags that I was introduced to through this. So I was just like, oh, that's funny. I wonder what episode that's from.
I have to object slightly to this compilation because it is framing Smithers as the Burns-asexual he used to be instead of just the standard gay man he would become. Because they're like, we can make more than one gay joke. We can make a ton of gay jokes if he was gay for all men.
If he was interested in all men instead of just Burns, we could mock him in so many ways for being gay.
This season, he left Monty to go to a gay resort where he couldn't take pictures.
We would hear about the his choice of lifestyle.
That's right, yeah.
And
this is your dead grandmother?
That's right, yeah.
I love that line. I can't wait for Homer's phobia to come up. But when you see all those strung together, you're like, oh, these are a lot of gay jokes on Smithers that they finally put together all at once. Well, Bobby, talk about little Henry getting angry and stuff in watching his first time. When I saw this commercial break questionnaire, I got so angry because I got this question wrong and didn't know why.
Which popular Simpsons characters have died in the past year? If you said Bleeding Gums Murphy and Dr. Marvin Monroe, you are wrong. They were never popular.
It's my line of the show.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
That's the joke.
It's so good because it totally takes a shot. You were already talking about this. This is like totally taking a shot at Round Springfield and Bleeding Gums Murphy. And from that point on, they define that character as not that popular.
No one cared. Really wasn't.
Nobody cared about him.
And that segment is kind of like, who's that Pokemon?
It's characters. You're right. It was
so Henry was like hurtling Spider-Man action figures across the room.
Well, so I wasn't mad that they said that Bleeding Gums wasn't popular. What I was mad at was it comes up and I'm like, oh, I'm definitely getting this right. That's Bleeding Gums Murphy. And who is that other guy? And then when it came back and they said Marvin Monroe, I was like, he never died. What are they talking about? That never happened. He's not dead. Whatever. Like, I was searching for that answer for like 2 years before it was.
Get a memorial hospital, Henry.
I never heard that line. It's so fast.
It's not even a spoken line. Is it spoken? I don't remember.
Marvin Monroe Memorial Hospital. That's where Homer was getting burns.
When I first saw this episode, I forgot about that line. So I assume, oh, it's like they're callously killing a character off screen because you haven't seen him in so long. So fuck him. I thought that was the joke. But then doing this again and watching DVDs and stuff, it's like, oh no, they did kill him off screen much earlier. Like, it actually happened,
just nobody noticed it. It was so subtle no one noticed.
So watching in syndication, I always associated those two characters with quote-unquote old Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
And I preferred Simpsons of, say, you know, the American era and, you know, seasons 4 through 7.
They're both season 1 staples who, when you see them, especially in silhouette, they're like, well, these are monsters. These aren't humans.
They have season 1 ass designs.
I didn't like season 1 in particular. So I was like, oh, if I saw Dr. Marvin Monroe, I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm not going to watch this
Marvin Monroe is particularly doodly. He looks like a doodle, not, and I don't mean a penis in Simpsons.
I can see your doodle.
Feels like a holdover from Tracy Ullman, actually.
Yeah, and he would be unkilled in season 15's Diatribe of a Mad Housewife. Though Blood and Guts Murphy has stayed dead, as his actor.
As says Ron Taylor,
He's the Bucky Rogers of the show.
So I did complain about that, but they were never popular is such a great line.
It's one of the good quotes from this episode.
Yeah, I know. No quotes. In the April Fool's Day one, maybe you get, I would have quoted like the foolish day in your life with an electrified fooling machine. I'd have said that. But
I can't think of another one.
Yoink? They say yoink in it.
Yoink is good. I'll take yoink.
Now Troy is going to be introducing some deleted scenes.
Right about now, you're probably saying, Troy, I've seen every Simpsons episode. You can't show me anything new.
Mm-hmm. You've got some attitude, mister.
Besides, you're wrong. Because sometimes episodes run long and certain scenes never get aired. So fire up your VCR, because here for the first time ever are the cutout classics.
When I was watching, I bet in first viewing, I probably said out loud, like, Troy, I already have my VCR ready. I'm recording it right now.
You've got some nerve, Henry.
I was the Simpson nerd as a kid, saying, like, I've seen every episode. You can't show me anything new.
They blew your mind, didn't they?
They did. I had no clue that. I mean, that really gets you to hang on in first viewing to the third act because you're like, I want to see these deleted scenes.
Like, what else can they show me? I need more.
Mm-hmm. Some of those deleted scenes are more famous than like the actual things. Like the robotic Richard Simmons has become like an actual thing.
It has become its own thing.
It's outlived its deleted status.
And yet, like, that is not actually a good joke. And people are like, well, it was probably a good idea that they cut it. But people are like, no, that's so funny. Oh my God.
I think it went from being celebrated to now being viewed as hacky.
Yeah.
But it is hacky.
I mean, I agree it's hacky. It's like the animation is good, but it's like that's the argument amongst the staff was like, this is a low hanging fruit, like making fun of Richard Simmons. And I agree.
They're better than that. They definitely are.
But it just works in this episode.
It does.
But so first we get some of the Krusty Gets Canceled deleted scenes. So let's teleport back to the season finale broadcast of season 4.
When Krusty the Clown got canceled, he tried everything to stay on the air. Here's what you didn't see.
If you watch my show, I will send you this book featuring me in a variety of sexually explicit positions. What? Oh, hey, it's not really me. I used a stunt butt.
Krusty, we're from the network. We have some bad news. I'm afraid your show's been canceled.
I thought this would happen. I just hope you replace me with something as educational and uplifting as I tried to be.
Actually, it's a hemorrhoid infomercial starring Claude Aiken.
Huh. Can I play hemorrhoid sufferer number one? Ooh, oh, that hurts. Oh, is there no relief?
I don't think so.
Well, how about one of the after guys? Ah, oh, that's better. I can ride a bike again.
Sorry.
I remember my friends and I trading back, I can ride a bike again.
That is a great line.
That's what makes it.
The reference to the infamous Madonna sex book.
Mm-hmm, her sexy sex book. If you want to see her, man, definitely there's one with her and Vanilla Ice. I know that is shot in that book. And I think the most famous shot from it is her hitchhiking naked. That's the big picture from sex.
If you want to see the book, go on Google image search and search for Madonna sex book.
You don't have to pay $100 for it anymore. That was something that broke puritanical America, the sex book, back when it came out. When I saw this deleted scene now, it made me realize, like, in the episode Krusty Gets Canceled, without that scene, you don't actually see him get canceled.
Yeah, I think we talked about it on that podcast. This scene is pivotal.
Yeah, this is a pivotal scene. In original broadcast, the first act ends with Krusty just seeing that no one is in his audience. And then when you come back from commercial break, Krusty is talking like, well, we've been canceled, but I crushed the Special Olympics. Like, but they don't have Krusty actually getting canceled, which is this scene is. So I'm kind of shocked they cut it, though. It doesn't have a famous
explanatory,
person in it.
Yeah. And the joke itself isn't actually that great.
They needed more time for Sideshow Luke Perry, who was quite funny. I wish he'd come back. And he's bigger than ever now. He's on Riverdale as Archie's dad.
Friend of the show. Kinda.
And then we get into the very recent deleted scenes of, well, first we get the Mr. Bond scene, which they cut out of like fear of lawsuits from folks.
Yeah,
I think
they had to call him Mr. Bont.
Bont, and it's Blofeld, except with like an extra accessory. But it's a funny scene, especially like rules for drawn stud polka.
You're not going to fool me with that one again.
Yeah. And that James Bond is right. He always wins. He doesn't lose. That's why it's a big shock in Casino Royale when he actually does lose at Texas Hold'em, which, like, Bond is better than that. Bond should not be playing Texas Hold'em.
He plays Baccarat in the novel that I read, and it's better than the movie.
Exactly. Though, how racist was that?
No. It's one of the least racist Bond novels.
All right, that's
which
cool.
Casino Royale are we referring to?
I'm talking about the Daniel Craig.
Then, Texas Hold'em was big in that time.
I know, but Baccarat is his game, man. They shouldn't go with if James Bond does one thing, it's not go along with trendy things.
Yes, good old Burt Baccarat.
So then we get scenes from the then very recent Mother Simpson.
Earlier this year, Homer's long-lost mother returned, and so did a long-lost care package.
Homer, please. You don't have to wolf down that 25-year-old candy just to make me happy.
But it won't make you unhappy, right? Hey, space food sticks! Oh, I wish I had these on my space adventure. Did you know I was blasted into space 2 years ago, Mom?
Oh, sure. I read all about it. I mean, it was national news. Do you still work for NASA?
No, I work at the nuclear power plant.
Oh, Homer.
Huh. Well, you'll be happy to know I don't work very hard. Actually, I'm bringing the plant down from the inside.
Oh, I forgot. I didn't keep in the sound effect of him tapping his nose. It's a great noise.
I think we all tapped our nose during that scene.
Maybe you could hear it, listeners.
A little bit of the spirit of his mother is alive. He's bringing down the nuclear industry from the inside.
I mean, through laziness, yeah. Not trying to. But
it's a viable tactic.
Only created a 3 Mile Island.
That's true.
It's true.
And much like Grimey would do later, they are tearing apart Deep Space Homer in the show of just like, this is crazy. This was national news. You're not a normal man anymore. You're the famous guy who crashed a spaceship.
And Homer doesn't realize why people wouldn't know it. Or like, he's like, have you heard about this? It's like, yes, you went to space. It was a huge disaster. You almost died.
It was all.
You almost killed Race Banyan.
And Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah.
You did it all. But if you want to know what space food sticks are, I have a helpful commercial to explain it.
Today, the United States is engaged in a gigantic effort to send men to the moon. For this effort, Pillsbury has developed many special foods. Here is the first one to be made available to the public, Space Food Sticks.
Huh.
To meet the demands of a long space flight, Space Food Sticks had to be a compact, nutritious, high-energy food. That's why they make the perfect between-meal energy snack.
Sure.
I didn't know that was a real name of a real product, Space Food Sticks.
It's so bad, right?
I could see the Pillsbury executive. You got these sticks that for space, Space Food space, Sticks. Make them. Who gives a shit?
Whatever. Yeah. I mean, if you just said... That's how Tang did so well. It's because you just said, oh, well, they use this in space. Oh, every child in America is going to buy
this. It's got a cool name that would eventually become filthy. Tang.
Oh, Tang. And then we get some, this is the first time I realized in the Homer Sells His Souls clip, Troy is making a joke by saying, cracked up to be, because Homer's skull cracks in the thing. I never took that as a bad joke.
You're right.
I mean, it's just how Dick Clark introduces things. Like, oh, these guys aren't going to, RIP Dick Clark. But I love these deleted scenes from Treehouse because... We not only get a Troy McClure episode, but we get a lost scene of Lionel Hutz, which I am so sad they deleted.
Layers. Oh, Lionel Hutz. Cases one in 30 minutes or your pizza's free.
I'd sell my soul for a Formula One racing car.
That can be arranged.
Changed my mind. Sorry.
Cool. Bart, stop pestering Satan.
Your Honor, we find that Homer Simpson's soul is legally the property of Marge Simpson and not of the devil.
Oh.
Yeah!
Woohoo! Oh!
Well, I didn't win. Here's your pizza.
But we did win!
That's okay. The box is empty.
If that's what they cut out, what they leave in must be pure gold. Let's watch some more of those fabulous Simpsons outtakes.
He was totally poked with a little cane to wake up.
I like
that's
that.
That's the fattest he's looked too.
I want to talk to our audience for a second. If you want to hear more about Simpsons deleted scenes, we've been doing the collections of them for each season after 5. So 5 is when they started appearing on discs. So every season has at least 25 minutes of deleted scenes, and we've covered all of them both in video and podcast version. So if you join our Patreon, you can get one of those.
And a lot of fun things in there that they didn't even put in this, but that, God, him with his empty pizza box promise is so beautiful. It's so
the box
perfect.
Is empty.
The box is empty.
I always, like, at some point I start mixing up whether or not these lines are, like, I always thought the Formula One racer thing was totally in that episode.
It's such a great gag. That one was just like, they have no time in Treehouse things. They always have to cut good stuff from that because they're fitting in 3 episodes worth of stuff into 1 episode, really. And then we get a scene I'm glad they cut. It's not exactly, I wouldn't call it insensitive entirely, but the Apu musical scene.
The Bollywood movie.
Well, we're making fun of Homer. Yeah. Like, Homer's the idiot.
Well, I think they're having their cake and eating it too because they are like, isn't this crazy? Look at this crazy film. But also Homer out loud saying, like, I'm laughing because they look different than me. Ha 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 ha.
I mean, it's kind of ham-fisted. It doesn't really work, but...
As is the previously mentioned Richard Simmons robot.
Here we go.
In this very special outtake, Homer attempts a reconciliation with his estranged son. Watch.
Bert, you're coming home.
I want to stay here as Mr. Burns.
I suggest you leave immediately.
Or what? You'll release the dogs or the bees? Or the dogs with bees in their mouth and when they bark they shoot bees at you? Well, go ahead. Do your worst.
My worst, eh? Smithers, release the robotic Richard Simmons.
Hello?
I like the T-1000 animation. It's good, but it is like... Richard Simmons jokes in 1994 when the episode aired. It's just like, come on.
I know I loved this as a kid, but now it's just like, this is some monkey cheese, like Mad Libs comedy. Mr. Burns just shutting the door is a much better joke because it is just the most simple, effective way to keep Homer out of the house.
He shut the door. That's a great line.
Or even seeing the dogs who shoot bees at you would be better than Richard Simmons.
Well, the Richard Simmons stuff overstays its welcome, too. It's just like...
Did they actually say the dogs who shoot bees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, in the original episode?
They do.
Yeah, that's
okay,
all.
Okay, well, they kept the best part.
That's the best part.
That's the best part of that scene.
I will say I'm impressed that Smithers always keeps a shotgun under his blazer. That's impressive.
It's good animation of him, like, pulling it out and, like, cocking it or whatever you do with a shotgun.
Like Arnold would do. Yeah. It's beautiful, but
and the head.
Yes,
good stuff.
And speaking of more inside jokes, here's a quick joke about how much Oakley Weinstein loved that Maggie was the culprit.
This past summer, all of America was trying to solve the mystery of who shot Mr. Burns. Then they found out it was the baby. To keep this bombshell secret, the producers animated several solutions that were never intended to air.
I mean, this was the best marketing gimmick for this episode of that. Who Shot Mr. Burns was so fresh in your memory. Like, to get more answers to that is just a beautiful... I think in the commercials, I mean, I was going to watch this regardless, but while in the commercials, what got me so hyped was seeing all the different pictures of people shooting Mr. Burns.
That was great.
Beautiful.
In case you forget from our last episodes about Who Shot Mr. Burns, I believe Josh Weinstein wanted Barney to do it and have Barney be arrested and leave the show for a while, but Merkin was insistent, like, no, it must be a member of The Simpsons. This is The Simpsons show. Mm-hmm. So they were kind of resistant against the idea. The episodes are great, though.
The episode is great, yeah. And Merkin was very clear that these things, that this footage, including the Smithers ending too, he tried to leak it, and he says that no news person would take it from him in the entertainment industry.
And I believe the entire scene with Burns and Smithers is just written by Merkin himself.
Yes, yeah. He talks about it on the commentary for the episode as one of the only things of his that Oakley and Weinstein ever laughed at.
Aww.
He's a little defensive, but yes, let's hear some of the Smithers bit here.
And to keep the show's animators, editors, staff, and hangers-on from leaking the solution, two completely different endings were produced. One real, one phony. Here's the ending you were never meant to see.
The one who shot me was...
Whelan Smithers!
No! Wait a minute.
Yes.
Yes.
That's actually one of my favorite lines from him.
Yes. No.
Wait a minute. Yes.
I do love the 5% pay cut. No.
It's so great. So
I actually think I prefer this ending to the one where, because I like the actual solution of, oh, it was Maggie, but I thought it was pretty funny that the whole like back and forth with Smithers and him going, no, and...
And the animation on it no.
It's great. Does he also say like, oh, I was busy that night?
Yes, exactly.
Right after I shot
Jasper. Another good one right there.
I was busy that night, yeah. And that Burns describes him as drunk as a lemur.
Yes.
Which is not...
Drunk as a lemur.
Lemurs don't get drunk.
Not a defining characteristic of lemurs.
And then, just to let you know that this was after the OJ trial.
Well, I'm just relieved that Homer's safe and that you've recovered and we can all get back to normal.
Not exactly. Smithers, for attempting to kill me, I'm giving you a 5% pay cut.
Oh. But of course, for that ending to work, you would have to ignore all the Simpson DNA evidence. And that would be downright nutty.
Yeah, I mean, Jurassic Park and O.J. Simpson taught us a lot about DNA.
They did.
Yeah.
Nobody knew what it was in 1992, and then all of a sudden...
It had that cool spinning helix.
Yeah, look at those helix. And then it just became a plot. Remember in the Doom motion picture that they're just like... Well, you know, if you map the entire human genome, you'll find the root of evil.
Well,
like,
thank you for reminding me that movie exists.
Yeah.
The story checks out.
It's not very good.
It's got a first-person shooter sequence in it.
I'm told that X3 and there's a Doom movie. Yeah. What's next?
The Doom movie, I'd watch it before the Assassin's Creed movie. I'd watch it then, but...
I don't think I would watch either of those movies because I value my time.
The Doom movie knows what it is. I think the Assassin's Creed movie thinks it's a real movie.
I think it thought it was... Was the start of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but yeah. for games.
And, I remember that E3. I think I was covering it, the Electronics Entertainment Expo for our friends at home, and a large portion of that conference by Ubisoft was just like, let's talk about the movie. Like, no, let's not talk about the movie, please.
Michael Fassbender thought he had a real thing there. He's like, this is my Iron Man. No luck there, Michael Fassbender. Go back to being a jerk. Then we get to the end of the episode, which this is how I think of how businesses think of art. And I love this line. This is another like classic line from this very good clip show.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, the Simpsons have come a long way since an old drunk made humans out of his rabbit characters to pay off his gambling debts. Who knows what adventures they'll have between now and the time the show becomes unprofitable. I'm Troy McClure, and I'll leave you with what we all came here to see. Hardcore nudity!
That's great. So there's one, like, extra salacious thing they stuck into this compilation. The scene from Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy, where they're just like, don't turn on the light, don't turn on the light. Mm-hmm. They use the first take of that scene where Marge is completely naked.
Oh, yeah.
Not under a blanket. It's like, you see, like, 85% of Marge.
I know. You are within millimeters of seeing her pubic hair in that shot. Like,
yes.
It's shocking. It is shocking.
I would say that Marge is the hottest character, or they draw her to be the hottest woman in Springfield.
Oh, boy. That cut scene from Springfield Confidential.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Good Lord.
You get to see her in her bra, and you're like, boy, this is a bit much here.
Very cheesecakey. They're having way too much fun.
Oh, yeah. Animators are horny. But, yeah, so after 2004, the infamous Super Bowl incident where kids saw a covered nipple, this would be verboten. This is basically pornography now. And they would always laugh at, like, we can't show an ass crack on TV anymore, yet this can air in syndication at, like, 3 p.m.
Yep.
They're like, there are no standards. There are no standards.
I mean, in the hardcore nudity, you're mostly seeing stuff that, no matter where you are in the sexual spectrum, it's not particularly exciting to you. You're seeing Barney lose his diaper. You're seeing Burns in the shower. You say, look, I'm not making judgment on this, but also a third of it is like Bart's butt. And I'm like, I'm good. I don't need to see this.
Ultimately, it's like three curved lines moving around. It's just like, I'm not getting off to that.
Based on the ads I've seen on Pornhub sites, some people are getting off to naked Simpsons characters, but they're no fun.
Great episode.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Until the time they become unprofitable.
Still hasn't happened. Still,
I mean, that line gets funnier, a little funnier every year.
They're getting close. My theory is Al Jean doesn't think that they've gotten to their current season is their last contractually obligated season. And Al Jean doesn't think it's the end. But I do think the specter of unprofitability is coming there, because now it's a Disney property and Disney might just be like, look, we got 30 years of episodes. Like, let's just call it a day and collect money off this.
So as of today, they just did the table read for season 30, episode 2. Titled "Tis the 30th Season," probably a Christmas episode. So.
Oh yeah. We also saw the Al Jean tweeted out a picture of the season 30 script called "Lisa Dates Homer."
Lisa has a crush on Homer.
Yeah, I was like, boy, this name. I don't know what's up with this guy.
You'll find out in 9 months. It'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine. Remember when there was the controversy like Homer's going to divorce Marge this season?
Oh, yeah. All right. Boo.
So I want to end with a confession. Mm-hmm. I like clip shows, actually.
Oh.
And I like clip shows because they often take my funniest or my favorite moments from a particular show and just allow me to relive them.
That's what we are, Kat. We are a clip show.
I love montages. I love a good montage. I used to watch a lot of anime music videos back in the day.
Yeah. AMVs.
So like a clip show, whenever a clip show would come on, I'd be like, oh, great. Yeah, this is an entertaining way to enjoy it, to digest my favorite TV show.
You know, I would agree on that hypocrisy of mine that I crap on these clip shows, though, not this one, but other ones. But I've watched so many videos on YouTube of like X character's best lines. Like, oh, this is fun. I want to hear all of Zap Brannigan's best lines. But I want to find those on my own and have them edited together by somebody else. I don't want it to take the place of weekly episode of something.
You want to watch them for 6 minutes, not 22 with commercials.
No, I mean, these clip shows are just gravy. Like, they didn't produce this instead of another full episode. They just did it extra.
It's an extra.
The thing is, if watching syndication, like, if it's in syndication, it's like, whatever, it's just a thing. But if it's a new episode and you're like expecting a new episode and it's a clip show, that's a little rougher.
Yeah, that's true. I think another thing if they wanted people to like a yearly clip show, they should have had him all hosted by Troy McClure from this one on. They should have had a 167th episode spectacular, a 203rd episode spectacular.
And then no more Troy McClure.
And then, yes, no more. Yeah.
Sorry to bring you all down, folks.
Dang.
Thank you for listening to Talking Simpsons, as always. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. Find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. It's a classic gaming podcast. Just go to Retronauts.com or look for Retronauts in your reliable podcast machine. We've been around for 11 years now, so we've had to have done something you like if you like video games. If you don't like video games, what's going on? Like, they're great. I love them.
And we're supported at Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Support us there and you'll see tons of cool stuff like we've promoted multiple times in this. You're missing out, folks. Listen to that interview with Bill Oakley. Listen to or watch our deleted scenes videos. Watch the shorts videos. And on top of that, you get access to every episode a week early and ad-free. Not to mention, you get the same deal for our new podcast, What a Cartoon, where we go through a different cartoon every week in the Talking Simpsons style. Plus, if you love Futurama, we're doing Talking Futurama right now, the entire first season only on the Patreon, patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Come on.
Yeah, I'm a contributor. I love this show.
Aw, thank you. Yes. Be like Cat, folks.
Yeah. If you pay us, we'll talk to you.
The amount of stuff that these guys produce is really incredible. I'm glad that they just bring me on and are like, yeah, aww, come and talk about Simpsons for a bit. I'm like, oh, yeah, I could do that. That's cool.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, you should come and listen to my other podcast. It's called Axe of the Blood God. It's an RPG podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, such and such. And we talk a lot about RPGs. And it's kind of a love letter to RPGs. Me and Nadia Oxford, who has also been on Retronauts in the past.
She has been, at least once.
Yes. So, yes, come on down. Listen to us talk about RPGs on US Gamer, which is my website. It's my day job.
Thank you so much for listening, folks. We'll see you next week with the second Christmas episode ever, Marge Be Not Proud. See you then. We'll